The Healthy Alabama podcast is sponsored by Enroll Alabama, a program that enrolls Alabamians in the health insurance marketplace. Navigators provide free local in-person support to all applicants. Enroll Alabama, 256-432-7494, 256-432-7494.
Welcome to another edition of the Healthy Alabama podcast, sponsored by Enroll Alabama. And done in partnership with WJOU. I'm David Person. I'm glad to have today in the studio with us Mr. Hallbrook Polite. He is the owner of Alternative Strategies. Hallbrook takes referrals from court systems, folks who've been convicted of domestic violence offenses. And he does counseling for these individuals. Is that a good way to sort of summarize what you do?
Thank you, David. And that's pretty thorough. I would say this. They call it psychoeducational classes because officially I'm not licensed, but I'm very well trained. So there are psychoeducational classes and they're a diversion program that allows perpetrators and folks that have had an issue in relationships to actually spend that time being re-educated as opposed to spending that time behind bars, which helps them, their family, and society.
And full disclosure, Hallbrook and I have done business through the years, and we also have a very strong personal connection in that his daughter is my goddaughter. So you do this in the Atlanta, Georgia area, and I think you're also in now...
Starting to branch out into Dalton, and at some point, the Huntsville area as well.
So these are primarily men, I would assume, who have been found guilty of being physically abusive toward their spouses or lovers or somebody in their family.
Yes, but that's incomplete in the sense that it could also be verbally abusive. It could be a threat. Temporary protective orders are a big part of what happens now. In the realm of domestic relations, if someone feels endangered, the woman or the man, and maybe possibly the children, they can petition the court for a temporary protective order. Some people know those as restraining orders. And in Georgia, uniquely, because Georgia has for some time been quite progressive in the area of domestic violence and battery programs. In Georgia, if you receive a temporary protective order, in a domestic situation, you are required by law to take 24 weeks of classes. So that's roughly 6 weeks of classes that will allow you to basically what I call re-engineer your life and your relationships. At least that's the work that we do with the men. And at times we do have an opportunity to engage with women on the anger management side because we find that in some cases women may be assigned to anger management for a domestic situation or something involving their children.
It sounds like to me that there is a very serious problem in our society as it relates to family interactions, healthy family interactions, the ability of individuals to communicate and to relate to their loved ones without being abusive is apparently not very, it apparently is very limited. Many people don't do that successfully. Is that your assessment?
I think that's very true. And David, if you think about it, most of us are taught, you know, multiplication. Most of us are taught how to drive a car by someone. But I think it's rare that someone sits down with us and gives us the how to date, how to be married, at least not in a formal sense. And I think that what I find after 6 months of spending time with clients, they often say, I wish I'd had a class on this in high school, because oftentimes we pick up relationship nuances through observation, and we may not necessarily, as one of my clients says, inheritance happens. We may not inherit the right things. We see behaviors, and we try to interpret those, and we try to implement those in our lives. And I think what we do again, in my work is re-engineer what you've learned and give people an opportunity to succeed in relationships where they have been failing previous to encountering us.
So what are the common problems, would you say, that people have in relationships that lead them to being physically abusive or verbally abusive?
Great question. We think about passing on stocks and bonds and homes, but we don't think about the behavioral traits that we pass on. And so the biggest thing that I am able to see immediately, and particularly thinking about the men, I just wrote down a note from a class I had last week, and a couple men were talking about women. They said, you can always get another one. All women come with expiration dates. So this is the whole idea of homogenizing women.
Wait a minute. All women come with expiration dates?
Yeah.
What did that person, I know you're in a flow, but I've got to ask, what did that person mean by that, do you think?
I think what he meant was that.
Because you understand what sure, I mean, it, sure. that could
That's
be
significant.
That almost sounds sinister.
And it can lead, and the point I was going to make is that can lead to disastrous results in relationships at a basic level, but what he simply meant was, when the relationship got difficult, when the communication broke down, or when he just wasn't satisfied with what he was getting out of the relationship, he basically would exit the relationship without any desire or any willingness to put in the real work that it takes to have a sustained, healthy relationship after the honeymoon period. And so,
but doesn't that also, I mean, to me, and maybe I'm reading too much into the statement, maybe I'm hearing it too literally, but it also to me almost suggests that not only does he see all relationships with women as temporary, but he sees them as disposable, and maybe that disposability, I think I'm making up a word there, but we'll just roll with it.
I like
but
it.
But that disposability or, you know, could include, in fact, termination, physically terminating. I mean, that's kind of where my mind went. Did I jump too far on that? Am I reading it too literally?
No, not at all. Cause I was going to say that what we find in this work is a lack of empathy and conscience and also a lack of clarity of values. But let's address that. And I wanted to kind of read something real briefly. There's this book, it's called The Prison of Hate, and it compares men in domestic violence situations to men or individuals that are involved in mobs as well as genocide. And it says, hot reactive violence is characterized by hatred of the enemy. The thinking apparatus of the individual who participate in massacres and lynching become focused on the enemy and produces progressively more extreme images. First, the member of the oppositions are homogenized. So that's exactly what this guy is talking about. They lose their identities as unique individuals. Each victim is interchangeable and all are disposable. So that's what we're talking about. So at a very basic level, That's where these men are. And what I like about it is the next step is something we really tap into. It says in the next stage, the victims are dehumanized. They are no longer perceived as human beings for whom one can feel empathy. They could just as easily be inanimate objects like mechanical ducks in a shooting gallery or targets in a computer game. So now we're just talking about how basically women are marginalized. They're looked at as food. We see these men basically thinking of women as objects. Finally, they are demonized, the embodiment of evil. Killing them is no longer optional. They must be exterminated. So that's the track that some of these men potentially could be on.
So that's the most extreme.
That's the most extreme.
But it's on the same continuum.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly.
So it really isn't a leap. And if you think about it, for those who may think it's a leap, I mean, we have a mutual friend.
Yeah, Kimya.
Kimya Motley, whose estranged husband at the time, they're divorced now, was angry with her because she was trying to leave him. He was abusive and she was trying to leave him. And this guy actually waited for her at her daughter's preschool, steps out from behind a bush with a gun, shoots her at point blank range and shoots the child at point blank range. Thank God both of them survived and lived and are living a healthy life. And thank God he's in prison.
Absolutely.
But I mean, the idea that this is something, oh, well, that's just you're overreacting. No. We know of far too many cases where, and that was just one example, where men actually do go to, and it's mostly men, go to the extreme with this idea of the disposability of a woman, the idea that a relationship or a woman has an expiration date.
Absolutely. And she actually has been instrumental in helping some of the men in my classes see that they were on this continuum. I've had, at least in one instance, a gentleman said he was mad at his partner and he went outside, he took his pistol and he just started firing it in the air to intimidate her. And after he heard Kimia's testimony, he realized something. It was a watershed moment for him. He realized that the next step for him was actually pointing the gun at her. And so,
thank God.
In the process of him engaging with Kimia and actually hearing her speak in class, he realized that he wasn't that different than her husband, who had actually gone that last and final step to demonize her because he couldn't control her. So again, I think that what I've realized about this work over time, because I didn't initially realize it, that it's a gift to these men to actually have an opportunity to press the pause button on their life and go through a process of self-reflection and what I call re-engineering, how they show up in relationships, how they show up in many parts of their lives as parents, as employees, as brothers and sisters. And it's been phenomenal for me.
This is the Healthy Alabama Podcast, sponsored by Enroll Alabama and done in partnership with our friends at WJOU-FM here in Huntsville, Alabama. I'm David Person, and we've got in the studio with us today Hallbrook Polite, the owner of Alternative Strategies. He does domestic violence counseling based on court referrals in the state of Georgia, and is planning to expand into Tennessee and maybe eventually to Alabama. So what do we need to be teaching our boys? Because I would assume that to solve this problem, we have to get to the root and try to get to the beginning. So am I right about that, first of all, that we need to be, that the solution is to get at boys before they become men? And if that's the case, what should we be teaching them?
That's another great question. I think that you're right, because when you talk about oppressed groups, oftentimes we must really engage the oppressor to figure out what the oppressor needs to learn to change their orientation towards those that they see as the other. So one of the questions that I ask of the men, I ask, what if every woman was your daughter or your sister or your mother, to make it real? And to a large extent, that starts to actually break down some barriers. But it's incomplete in that sometimes they're able to disassociate and say, well, if it happened to someone related to me, I would make a stand. But they see oftentimes other people, their daughters, their sisters, their mothers as strangers. And so we have to work in communities to build those connections that allow people, all of us, to see each other as brothers and sisters and being people of the same type of goals and aspirations. So one of the things that is huge for us is values clarification. And so if we operate life based on a set of values, then that means that it not only extends to our family, but extends to the stranger we meet along the way, or the person at our school, or the person at our job. So it sounds kind of cliche, but getting back to that idea of them actually each day operating on a clear set of values and being able to connect with people based on positive values. And there's something we call pro-social behavior, as opposed to operating in a value system that allows them to hurt themselves. And as I say, sometimes we have folks that show up as emotional suicide bombers. They destroy their lives and everyone within 5 feet of them. Well, those are not the outcomes that they want in life. They really do want positive lives. So looking at their values, clarifying those, and actually extending that value system, not just to their family, but to the people they meet as strangers along the way.
So it's not safe to assume that for every man or every boy, the solution is simply to say, okay, think of this woman. Imagine if this was somebody else being the perpetrator, and that the woman was your sister, your mother. You're saying that there's a deficit even with some men, so that they just disconnect that. They compartmentalize the
Absolutely.
Women in their lives from other women. Or other females.
Absolutely. And so in addition to that work, because that's scratching the surface, we have to give them exercises that build their empathy muscles. And one other thing that's really powerful is them seeing themselves at a certain point as a child and the learning that maybe the maladaptive learning that they've developed, and then seeing how that's being passed on to their children. So once they start to make the connection, maybe at one point they were a clean slate and they learned these behaviors, and you couple that with whatever trauma they may have experienced, and they start to operate in a negative way of thinking. Once they actually have an opportunity to see that something else works by implementing new strategies within their family, then they bring that feedback to the group. And then we see something called the universality of group, meaning that there are maybe 8 to 10 men in a group. And so a positive experience becomes contagious, and it could happen right there in the group, or it could happen at home and the person brings it back to the group. So having these folks in a group setting, talking about shared experiences, the challenges, but also the positive accomplishments that they've had, helps the men move further in a positive direction.
All right. Now, I know that we're talking about this primarily as a dynamic in which men are the perpetrators and women or females are the victims. And we understand that's not always the case, but overwhelmingly, men are the perpetrators, right?
Yeah.
How would you break it down percentage wise with what you see in your business?
So we're talking in terms of reported cases. 90% of them are men perpetrating on women. And then, of course, the remaining 10% is women in reverse. There's some studies that say those numbers could potentially be a little higher, maybe around 25%, but that's not definitive. And one of the questions that always comes up is, will a man call the police or authorities or take out a temporary protective order if he is physically or verbally assaulted? The answer more often than not is no. And that's a part of our psyche that maybe needs to change as well, because mm-hmm. my position is no one in the house should be abusing anyone physically or verbally. And it's, you know, again, it's almost taboo for, particularly in the groups that I'm in, but probably within most male groups, for a man to say, you know, their wife physically assaulted them. They may admit to verbal assault, but physical assault, men are less likely to report that just because of our acculturation, our ego, our machismo. It's less likely.
Sure. And I wish I'd thought to ask you this sooner, because we're so deep in the conversation now. You know, physical assault is fairly self-explanatory, but a verbal assault, how do you distinguish between an inappropriate verbal assault and merely a heated argument or an animated discussion?
I would say that what happens in this work and what happens in relationships, at times we may have a disagreement with someone, but we break that adage of being disagreeing without being disagreeable. We break that idea and we go into personally attacking the person and actually creating some type of verbal threat by actually saying that you're going to do harm to that person, their children, their family members. And that's when actually the court systems may get involved. If the person feels not just intimidated, but if they feel that they're in danger and they report this to a police officer, or they fill out paperwork for a temporary protective order or restraining order, mm-hmm. there is action. Particularly what I found, and this is the way it's working today, is that if a woman files a petition with the court and she says she feels threatened in an intimate relationship, at least the counties I work in, they're pretty proactive about responding and allowing for that protective order to go through. There are some cases where they don't go through, but I would say the overwhelming majority of them are granted by the court systems that I work
in. Okay, so a woman who feels threatened, that's the measure. Do you feel threatened? Do you feel like your life is in danger or your safety's in danger?
Correct.
So what about when, you know, a man, as we say colloquially, calls a woman out of her name? You know, he uses profanity. He uses other demeaning language to speak to her. Does that constitute, in your mind, a verbal attack that could lead to charges?
You know, that's a hard question to answer, because I think that oftentimes we're asking police to show up and kind of sift through that. I would say at times that has happened, depending upon what the police are able to ascertain during their investigation. And what I mean by that, let's say there's a heated argument between a man and a woman, and when the police arrive on scene, no one's physically injured, but there's destruction of property. Again, I've seen in many cases, there's a charge that is given, and it's based on the fact that there's, as we talked about, there's this continuum. They're arguing, he destroys property, what's the next step after that? And sometimes in their judgment, it seems that they're making the call that this person is using a level of intimidation that could lead to something more dangerous. And people have been arrested. It's a charge in Georgia called criminal trespass, and it's usually related to maybe they got in an argument and he punched a hole through the wall. He kicked a hole in the door. He broke her cell phone. So those types of things have resulted in men being charged.
So destruction of property, that's great. I'm glad you brought
that
up.
And harming of animals as well.
Oh, okay. Okay, again, as a threat or to intimidate or something.
Because this is an indirect way of hurting the other person.
Right. So, again, getting to the couples argue. So I guess what I'm trying to get at is, where's the line in your mind? Where's the line that should not be crossed by a man if he's disagreeing with his wife or his girlfriend, or a child even? What's the line that should not be crossed?
I try to gain wisdom from clients sometimes, and I remember once this client said to the class, "You can't unring a bell." And when he said it, was pretty profound, because everyone knew what he meant, because he had said something just incredibly hurtful to his partner. And so one of the principles that we discuss is having a disagreement with someone, but allowing that other person and yourself to maintain your dignity in the disagreement. And so
I like that.
So
that's great.
Because here's the thing. At the end of the day, if you disagree with someone, that doesn't have to mean that they're a bad person. It just means that you don't disagree on a particular topic, and you can move past that topic and maybe even table that topic and still pass the meatloaf and have a nice dinner.
Right.
But sometimes when we're stuck in, you know, having our way, stuck in this idea that everything has to be resolved in that moment, then that's when we get these disastrous results and we get escalation beyond what is reasonable, because again, there are times when issues have to be tabled. And we talk a lot about giving each other timeouts, but timeouts are, it's conflict resolution on training wheels, because eventually you do have to go back and have that discussion.
Before we run out of time, and this will be the last question I ask you, what do you advise? You know, we talked about what you would advise for men. What do you advise women to do in order to, ensure that they're safe and that they are not in danger when dealing with a conflict with a husband or boyfriend?
It's interesting, because I have this chart sitting in front of me, and as I think about this, I think men and women in our modern society need the same thing. I think we need support systems, and I'm looking at this chart. It says you in the middle, and then at the top it says mentor, it says mentee, family, and accountability partner. And so if I look at my own life, I can identify people in those categories. And if I see men being successful in class, they have had those things in their life, or they're looking to form those things in their lives. And so for women, they need to have their voices heard, whether they find counseling from a private agency, from church, and they also need other women that have had relationship experience so that they can give them positive feedback, also encouragement, and some direction. But again, that's always a challenging point, because how much do you let other people into your world? So starting with the professionals first, allowing them to give you some type of insight into what you might experience. Because if someone has actually dealt with domestic violence intervention before, like I've been doing this work for 10 years, so I know what agencies to put men and women in touch with to further the depth of their work, but also to give them resources they need to actually move past this challenge in their life. But I think more than anything, before we get to the point where we're in a conflict, we need to avail ourselves of our support systems. And if we don't have support systems, we have to work hard to maintain strong support system. I heard this quote one time. It's hard to define a person outside of the people around them. And it really is. I mean, you really need good friends or family members you can trust to talk about some of the things you might encounter in life.
So being isolated, not a good thing.
And that's one of the tactics that men use with women.
Yeah,
to
not actually, letting. Yeah, I was going to say that's exactly my point. You got to, if a man is trying to keep you from your family or your sister friends or whatever the case may be, that's an unhealthy situation. Really, just right off the bat, that's unhealthy. That's a huge red flag.
Absolutely. And one of the things that I encourage the men, and I would encourage all women, go through the four seasons, spring, summer, winter, and fall with the man, and actually understand his family, all those dynamics, because at the very...
Go through the four seasons at the beginning of the relationship.
Sure, in terms of getting to know the person before you get entrenched. And, you know, my rules are moving in, married, having a baby with them, because you know, in that population that I'm dealing with, that's what's happening to a lot of these folks. They're getting very seriously involved in a relationship after 3 months. And so giving it time.
So a lot of, okay. And of course, what you didn't say, but I'm going to inject into this is that sex can definitely cloud your wisdom in terms of being discerning about what you're seeing and facing in a relationship.
Absolutely. You're losing your objectivity and your ability to view this person's actions as something, whether it's good or bad, because maybe you've lost your rationality because of the emotions involved, because you're sexually and physically and spiritually involved with the person.
Right.
And so spending some time, substantial amount of time, getting to know that person will do you good. And here's the other piece to it. If this gentleman's walking around saying women have expiration dates, maybe his time with you expires before, you know, you actually are physically tied to this person. So then you know that that's not a person long term that you're going to have a healthy relationship with.
Albert Polite is the owner of Alternative Strategies. He does counseling based on court referrals. He does counseling and workshops with persons who've been referred to him by the court system in Georgia. He plans to expand into Tennessee and maybe even Alabama at some point in the near future. If somebody wants to reach out to you for your services outside of, you know, the court system, do you accept those kinds of calls?
Absolutely.
Okay, give us your contact information.
Okay, sure. You can reach me by email at hsandhat, and that's Polite, Polite, at msn.com, or you can go to Facebook and you can type in Alternative Strategies in the search window, and you can just leave me a message there on Facebook, as well as you can call me at 404-805-9804. That's 404-805-9804.
Albert Polite, thanks, brother. Appreciate you.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
The Healthy Alabama Podcast is sponsored by Enroll Alabama and is a partnership between WJOU and David Person Media, LLC. The theme music was produced by Dijon Bailey. I'm David Person, host and producer of the podcast. Until next time, be healthy.